You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. Thanks for joining us. Pete Zimmerman's the producer, and we got another busy show planned for you today. We'll start with Jason Turner. He is the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. WintrustWealth.com is the place to find Jason. Jason, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Let's talk a little bit about the job numbers, job list numbers, and the markets. What's jumping out at you today? What are you looking at?
Well, for the first time in 4 weeks, we saw an increase in the initial jobless claims. Of course, we're still at a very expanded level, over 700,000, but it actually ticked up to 742,000 in the last week. Maybe the tip of the iceberg of new restrictions and this new wave of COVID starting to impact the unemployment market.
You know, they say you're not supposed to market time, but I think I could, and here's how I would do it. Every time I see the kids from Notre Dame rush onto the field, or a crowd celebrate in front of the White House, anytime I see a crowd of people get together, I'm going to imagine that 2 weeks from now, there's going to be a spike in COVID cases, and then the Dow is going to go down as a result. And so all I got to do is time the market, and I have a two-week notice of when that's going to happen. What do you think of my strategy?
I'm never one to advocate timing the market, John, but the pattern is certainly held true from the summer. If you go back to the Sturgis motorcycle rally in yeah. South Dakota through to now. Every time you see large crowds, you give it a 10 days or 2 weeks, and you see a spike in COVID cases, and the Dow typically reacts negatively. Although with the news we had earlier this week and last week around the vaccine, that strategy likely has a couple holes in it going forward as we see some positives, at least looking out into 2021.
Yeah, I'm not as good at predicting vaccines. But it makes you also wonder what the inherent values are of the companies that make up these indexes, right? Like, shouldn't that be the real indicator of what the values of the Dow and the NASDAQ are?
It should, and we've seen some very stark differences in valuations within the indexes. It's something we've talked about before, but the last 2 weeks, we've seen a number of those unloved companies in the industrials sector, for example, perform quite well in the last 2 weeks since the certainty started to emerge around the election and some of the progress around the vaccine. And then today, we've seen a bit of a reversal of that as the technology names and the growth-oriented work-from-home stocks are performing a little bit better. The Dow's down, for example, and NASDAQ is up.
Yeah. I wonder what the best bit of news would be, not just for retirement plans, but just for jobs and wages. I guess it would be that the COVID numbers go down, or you could say no a stimulus package, or you could say just a 95% with infrastructure vaccine. I mean, if you had to pick one thing that would make you most confident we're going to get out of this sooner than later, what would it be?
If I had to pick one thing in the short term, it would be another round of stimulus. I think we've seen another million Americans fall below the poverty line in the last 3 weeks alone. That's an update from the University of Chicago just here in the last couple of days as they've looked through it. We have an expiration the day after Christmas in two key extended unemployment benefit programs at the federal level that'll see even those that are receiving $200 or $300 a week that start to receive nothing, and that lack of support for a segment of the economy is, in the short term, the thing that's maybe most impactful for me from a broad economic perspective.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering. 12 million Americans are going to lose various kinds of benefits the day after Christmas. What do we need to know about that?
The solution there is an extension of unemployment benefits through another stimulus package, and hopefully Congress, even though sitting in a bit of a lame duck session, can get something done in the next month. Or the new Congress, when it sits in January, can take care of that for us. But those individuals that are going to lose those benefits are going to be hurting pretty significantly shortly after the holidays.
Jason, we get mixed reviews on this show about how aggressive that package should be. What sort of benefits would you extend to help the economy the most?
Again, those unemployment benefits for those that really need it. I think we saw the big $3 trillion package in the spring really hit anybody who had any sort of need. I think the needs have become more targeted. We've seen unemployment come down. And the last reading was 6.9% across the economy. And if we look at different segments of the economy, there are certainly areas that are hurting and areas that are fine. And something from a stimulus perspective targeted at those that are hurting, both small businesses and individuals would be my first choice.
Would you do $1,200 a person for those that qualify?
I think an extension of the unemployment benefit, so supporting those that are not receiving a paycheck is the best course of action there from an economic benefit. Support those that don't have income as opposed to a flat dollar amount. I think we're seeing retail spending, for example, has been up for 6 months in a row. Obviously, it was not up all that much in the last month, just about 0.3%, but we're still seeing retail spending climb its way higher, and that's because of the folks in the economy that are getting paychecks or are spending them.
That's true. Jason Turner is the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. Wintrustwealth.com. Thanks, Jason. Well done.
Thank you, John.
Let's talk to Ian Schur now. Ian, thanks for joining us again, the editor-at-large at CNET. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm on Twitter. I'm amazed that Twitter tweets are now going to be available as fleets because they should have been, if ever there was a platform that I think would lend itself to vanishing messaging, it would have been Twitter. But they're the last to do this, aren't they?
Among them, yeah. You know, it's interesting. So, as you point out, Instagram, Facebook, which owns Instagram, YouTube, it's Snapchat started a lot of this, have these ephemeral posts, right, that you put it up and in 24 hours it disappears. And Twitter is one of the last to do this. They call them fleets, which is cute, but the real question a lot of people have had is, how is this too different from what Twitter does now? Twitter is such a real-time thing, right? Like, you go to Twitter not to find out what baby photos your friend posted yesterday. You go there to see what is happening now. And a lot of people are like, well, that's kind of the point of Twitter. And I sent one fleet, and it was literally just a tweet, right? It could have been a tweet, but it was a fleet. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how people use it, and also I'm curious to see how Twitter manages it and makes sure that it doesn't turn into yet another tool of hate and harassment that constantly happens on their platform.
Well, I think the attraction to me would be that it would insulate you from your stupidity after 24.
Nothing insulates anyone from stupidity on the internet.
Understood, because people could still, you'd still be able to capture it as a screen grab, right? So if you say,
exactly,
your political enemies will always have whatever you fleeted.
Yes. Yes, stupidity is not fleeting. But no, I think the reality is that, you know, one of the things about Instagram that was really fascinating is when they started doing this, they call it stories, is that, you know, one of the reasons people started using it so much was that it allowed them to tie a bunch of posts together, which was cool. Twitter already has a threading thing, so we don't need that. But also it allowed them to post photos that didn't look perfect, right? And a lot of people felt like if they're taking an Instagram photo, it has to be an Instagram photo. It has to be amazing. And the stories allowed them to take kind of blurry ones or whatever, and people really love that. Twitter doesn't have that problem. So, again, I'm kind of lost on what they think is going to happen here, but we'll see.
Talk to me about Black Friday and what's happening there relative to your world.
Well, essentially, Black Friday, if you are planning to camp out next week and do the doorbuster thing, you are going to be very disappointed because most of that stuff is happening online. You should be sitting on your couch in your PJs and drinking hot chocolate. The reality is that most of the retailers have moved all of their stuff online. They are doing, instead of having doorbusters, they're having limited time sales. So, for example, Best Buy and Walmart have literally been sending me emails left and right. For the next 2 hours, you can get this for this much out. And it's really interesting to see. You know, the retailers have been essentially doing Black Friday since October, partially because they're terrified that all of us are not going to spend as much because we're worried about the economy. But also, one of the other things that they have to deal with is that all of the package deliverers are going to be overworked, right? It's always hard for them to do the holidays anyway. Then you have the mess that happened with the U.S. Postal Service over the summer, and now we're thinking about, you know, a bunch of more boxes coming through the system because people aren't going to stores. So it's going to be very interesting to watch, But we at CNET, of course, are always keeping track of the best deals. There's millions of them out there. So we actually collect it all together. We have a gift guide, all these types of things, because more so than ever, the digital version of shopping is becoming the way that this stuff is happening.
You don't think that vaccines are going to clog the system in the next 36 days, do you? Shipments of vaccine-related things going to and from in the system?
I honestly don't know how the vaccines are being deployed, and I don't think the government said. There is a lot of talk of the military being involved, and if that's the case, then it doesn't even matter, right? It's not going to be USPS or FedEx or UPS. But I will say, regardless of how that plays out, one thing people should keep in mind, a lot of people always say to me, well, you know, I've got until mid-December to buy stuff and ship it. No, you don't. You should be thinking that your deadline is like early December. So, because if you get something on December 15th, I guarantee you, you're not going to have it under the tree or next to the menorah. So you
really
have to do stuff
early. You think if I order it this second or third week of December, third I understand, but December 15th you think is a cutoff date for reasonable expectation to get it?
No, it used to be December 15th.
Oh.
I'm saying do it earlier because, honestly, you have to think. I mean, I don't know the future, right? But I think that just looking at the tea leaves and the data that's coming out, the amount of packages coming through the system, they're not going to be able to keep up. And eventually it's going to be that there are going to be slowdowns. And we've seen this happen before. UPS and FedEx have had times when they got overwhelmed and they weren't able to deliver packages on time and they were a few days late and a lot of people were angry. And I think this time around it's going to be way worse. Maybe I'll be wrong and that'll be great and everyone will be happy. But I think to be smart, you should be shopping earlier rather than waiting and taking your chances.
What's the shell like on the iPhone mini? You guys are writing about that, the new one, the 12.
Yes. So we have been torture testing all the iPhones. We torture test everything, right? We literally, with the folding phones, we got a folding robot, and we had it fold and unfold for 12 hours just to see if it lasted. And that was a fun video to put up. But with the iPhone 12, one of the things about it is that the front cover is not glass. Apple says that it's a special material that they call ceramic shield because it has little bits of ceramic in it that are see-through. And it sounds like great marketing, but we were like, does it actually work? So we have dropped the iPhones, the iPhone 12, the iPhone mini, all of them, from hip height, from head height, from above that. We took sandpaper to it. We rolled it across tile. And we found out that this is actually a lot more durable. It's not indestructible, but a lot of Apple's claims seem to be actually holding up. Now, actually breakable, so you have to be careful. But the front seems to actually be pretty durable.
How impressed are you with Zoom's pitch to not cut people off after 40 minutes on Thanksgiving?
I mean, I think it's the one way that Silicon Valley is able to help. So you may have heard, literally today, the CDC just asked us all not to travel for Thanksgiving. And I heard a lot of groaning from everywhere, right? Because we're tired of this. We want to be with our families. And one of the things that I think is going to be really tough is that, you know, how are you going to be able to spend time with family if you're not able to travel? And so one thing that a lot of people started doing is using Zoom for family stuff. I actually went to a Zoom wedding recently. I went with my daughter, her first birthday. We had a laptop open and Zoom. People were coming in and out as she was smashing her face with cake. It was great. And so now Zoom is going to do a thing where they used to do it, if it was free, if you're using a free account, you don't pay them, it would cut off after 40 minutes. They're not going to do that anymore for Thanksgiving. So you can set up the laptop at the end of the table and have people in and out all the time and hang out with you, and you don't have to worry about it cutting people off. And I think, I mean, that's legitimately a great thing to do.
I wonder if there's going to be such a crash that the, the servers won't hold the capacity, you know?
I mean, I have to say that for all the times that everyone thought Zoom was going to be overwhelmed, they've really handled things well. That doesn't mean they will in the future, but hopefully everyone else will take a message, like Microsoft Teams and Skype and all these others will make it easier and cheaper to do this on Thanksgiving as well, so that we all use a bunch of different systems, right? Because not everyone wants to use Zoom.
Yeah.
So that would be great as well. But one way or another, this is an option. It's not great. It's not the replacement, but it's an option for not traveling.
Ian Schur, editor-at-large, CNET.com. Okay, Ian, well done. We'll visit again. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Absolutely. Take care.
Yep, yep. In fact, 1 week from today is Toiki Day, or Turkey Zoom Day. It's 12:20. We are downtown Chicago. It's beautiful here. You know, we're not supposed to go outside so that we don't spread COVID, but I think if you stayed in your car, this would be a good time to travel through the city because it just looks beautiful. It's not that crowded on the roads right now, and there are some architectural wonders, plus the city's put up the lights. It looks like Christmas. Nobody came. Greg Randall is a managing principal at GREC Architects, and some of his work is nicely on display in the city. Greg, you're on WGN Radio. Hello.
Hi, John. Thanks. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what GREC has been doing. You guys are big in the West Loop, right?
Yeah, they've actually done quite a bit of work in the West Loop. As we all know, it's kind of a neighborhood. The West Loop Fulton Market area has kind of been transforming for some time, and we've been very fortunate as a firm to be part of that evolution and transition. And a lot of our projects, we're a Chicago-based design firm. GREC works all over the country and internationally as well. And we really try to focus our work and our efforts on experiential architecture and placemaking. And so working in the West Loop gave us that great opportunity to really sort of impact that neighborhood with a number of different residential communities, hospitality projects, et cetera. A lot of places where people gather, whether it's to work, whether it's to play, whether it's to relax, socialize with friends, et cetera. And we're really excited about the impacts we've been able to contribute to in that neighborhood, for sure.
There was, maybe there still is, the idea that we'll create a building or a community that you can live in but also eat in and shop in. In some ways, the Corn Cob Towers were supposed to be a version of that, a city within itself. There's a building on the south extension of the Chicago River that sort of mimics that. Is that a viable view of living in cities today?
It certainly is an interesting point of view, and that definitely was sort of on trend in sort of in the 60s. But certainly bringing together all of those elements of a person's experience or their lifestyle into sort of one place. But we find that, you know, humans are curious creatures. They need to explore. So providing those things near each other and associating them somehow is definitely very important, but putting them all in sort of one box, I guess, to say, isn't necessarily the way we look at things anymore. We really encourage people to get out in the community and explore things.
Well, then would you say the West Loop is a sort of hybrid of that then, or an extension of that, right? It's not all in that building, but that sure is a hot neighborhood. It's got residential, it's got restaurants, it's got entertainment, so it is all in that space anyway.
And it's certainly very, very walkable, right? I mean, there are, you know, you have your choice of restaurants, you have your choices of places to go for entertainment, to interact with other folks. And some of those things actually occur, you know, sort of, quote unquote, back at home. And, you know, GREC created a number of buildings, one being the Port at 845 West Madison, where we have integrated into that building, you know, some retail, but also a lot of social spaces and a lot of interactive spaces where many folks are currently working at home, and even before the pandemic, a lot of folks, you know, were able to work from home. And whether that's in their own individual unit or in the out, you know, external support spaces that we like to put into our projects that allow people to do some of those additional activities either in and around their residence itself.
Yeah, I don't know if those first versions of this kind of living we were thinking about anticipated that or had that sort of common space idea, but that sure seems to be a smart idea now.
Absolutely.
What's the near-term or mid-term for a business like yours with the whole world changing about where we live and work? Are you changing the way you think about these places, or are we going to recover and you'll be in the same place all along?
I would say that I think my answer and GREC's answer has evolved over this pandemic. Yeah. I think initially, we spend a lot of time, we do a lot of commercial interior space, a lot of workplace as well. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a good amount of time sort of working on our white papers and thought leadership as it relates to how does the work environment change. And I think many people, there may be some folks that don't agree with this, but I think over time, it's going to probably be our human nature to return to normal. It won't look exactly the same, but I don't think it'll be as how to say this, you know, sort of unsocialized, if you will. I think people need to be together. They need to interact. They need to create in groups and not sort of remotely and electronically.
You have something in mind, I wonder about
kind of normalcy, I hope.
Yeah, but I wonder, too, though, I mean, do you have a sort of sneak peek into the evolution of that? So there's going to be, I don't know, shields or air filtration systems or touchless environments. What do you think will be the next sort of twist on this?
Yeah, I think those will probably be new standards. You know, if we think back about, historically about the interior office space, it used to be what we call status plan, where everybody got a private office. Everybody, yeah. Depending upon your stature within the firm, right? You would get, you know, maybe you get the corner office, but you would have support staff sort of in the center of the building. But everybody had a cubicle, or everybody had a hard wall office. And then that evolved into what we would call the open plan. And many offices work this way now. Even law firms, which are traditionally what we call status plan, have really opened up to kind of come out into a communal workplace where people work shoulder to shoulder to a certain degree in the office environment. So I don't see that going back to the hard wall cube. I don't see that going back to the private office, but we do see all the things that you mentioned. You know, shields between desks and across from desks, being smart about planning those breakout or amenity spaces and social spaces like cafeterias or meeting rooms and things like that will probably increase the amount of square footage per person in a typical office, but also creating wider aisleways, having sanitization stations, certainly improving indoor air quality is a very big one as well. Newer buildings have that opportunity to adapt fairly quickly to that as well. So air changes, air purification, etc.
Probably the way we should have been living all along, but the market wasn't demanding it. So it would have seemed a little hyper if we had maybe instituted those things originally, and now we wish we had, huh, Greg?
Some of it, yeah. I think that, you know, and it continues to evolve, right? I think, you know, we're thinking of, you know, the physical things that we touched on. You know, GREC was asked by a number of our clients that we were working with at the time of the pandemic, you know, what should we do? What should we be thinking about? And I think we've fallen into that very understood set of protocols that we just spoke about. And I think those are the physical impacts we can make in a workspace environment.
GREC Architects, Managing Principal Greg Randall. Greg, what a pleasure to meet you. Our best to everybody. Keep doing the good work you folks do. And thanks for visiting with us today.
Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be able to speak about GREC for a moment. Thank you.
Yeah, no kidding. You betcha. Greg Randall over there. Here in Chicago, that is. They do work around the world. It's 12:43. Let's go back into the WGN radio newsroom on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based McDonald's and Walmart are among the companies with the most workers on federally funded social safety net programs like food stamps and Medicaid. The Government Accountability Office says the workers need the benefits to be able to pay for food and health care. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says the report shows the giant corporations are paying starvation wages. A McDonald's spokesperson says the findings reflect that their companies are among the largest employers in the U.S. United Airlines says it's seen an uptick in cancellations and a decrease in bookings for the week ending November 18th due to a recent spike in COVID cases. The carrier says it expects total revenue to be down by nearly 67% in the fourth quarter of 2020 compared with a year earlier. Mayor Lightfoot's proposed $94 million property tax is one step closer to becoming reality. The mayor's tax plan cleared a key city council hurdle yesterday when it was approved by the Finance Committee. Lightfoot is hoping the tax increase will help close a $1.2 billion budget gap next year. The full city council could vote on the plan next Tuesday. The tax increase will cost the owner of a home valued at $250,000 an extra $56 a year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's take that time with Amy Guth. Amy, I don't know if this is the best laid plans of mice and men or if this is just dumb, but Lyft said, we've got a good idea. Let's tell everybody to use one of our vehicles for their Thanksgiving travel plans. And they're getting some pushback on that, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B of the two options you mentioned. So Lyft sent out some notices to certain customers, some by email, some by push notification in the app, that said essentially, hey, last-minute Thanksgiving plans, book a car and make them happen, or rent a car and make them happen, and immediately got a lot of pushback on social media. You know, one person said, no, Lyft, read the news. Another, wildly irresponsible. Last time I checked, we're in the middle of a worsening pandemic. You know, so immediately a lot of customers were like, what are you talking about? Lyft gave a statement saying, hey, we encourage users to follow guidelines. We should have made that more clear in the email. But for the most part, this was a pretty big belly flop for Lyft. You know, they were trying to take advantage of the holidays. Most, you know, retailers do. They'll usually have some kind of sale or promotion around this kind of thing. And this one did not go so well. You know, we see this so often. Anytime there's a big event happening or a big news story, a retailer or some kind of brand will try to attach themselves to it on social media sometimes and just really, really flop. There's many very famous missteps like that, and I think this shall be one of them.
But my ongoing rant, Amy, has been that we speak out of both sides of our mouth. We say, you can open up, but don't anybody dare patronize that business. So you can go to stores still, but we don't want you to go to stores. You can operate Lyft, but we'll shame anybody that uses your service. I mean, we're damning all of them, not just the restaurants, to try and make it through the end of the year. If you are going to go somewhere and a Lyft is the safest way for you to get there, I don't think you know to apologize to or explain that to anybody. That's the end of my rant, Amy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, you know, and this is mostly dealing with a separate area of Lyft. It's known for that ride share. Someone will come and pick you up in their own car.
Yeah.
They also rent cars in many markets. Chicago is one of them. There are two locations in Chicago where you can rent a car from through a partnership. This is kind of what they're mostly promoting, but agreed, it's kind of a, you know, get your message solid here kind of thing. And that's often where we see brands really stepping in.
Well, I suppose that was their biggest mistake. You may quibble with me on this, but the messaging sure wasn't optimal there. Morton's, the original steakhouse on State Street, is closing for good or temporarily. What are you hearing?
Yeah, they're closing. That news just has started to emerge today. They are closing their original location on State Street. It opened in 1978. The COO, Tim Whitlock, released a statement, and he felt that the COVID restrictions were to blame, that they really just couldn't survive this time. Safety measures or not, they really just couldn't keep going. The Morton's, the other location at 55 East Wacker, that's going to still be in operation, but this one on State at 1050 State is closing down after 42 years.
So they're not going to open up. They do have other Morton's around the country. I guess it'll be piecemeal. The ones that can still operate probably will, huh?
Yeah, that's right. They operate about 65 restaurants, according to their website. They had restructured their lease at the Wacker location, and that may have something to do with that, you know, when you're able to work with your landlord, perhaps it's easier to keep going a little bit longer, and that's something we're seeing with a lot of retailers, a lot of very big brands, talking about that in their quarterly earnings reports of having to negotiate with landlords, especially when they have many, many locations like the Bed Bath & Beyond and those kind of places, working with landlords just to stay afloat. I think that conversation might be changing, not with smaller companies, but with the big box ones. As we have, you know, there's hope on the horizon now of a vaccine being several months away, things like that. There's hope ahead, and I think that might be more fiscally, it might make more fiscal sense for landlords to keep someone in a space and work with them, especially outside of court, than it would for landlords to try to take tenants to court. So we might see a little bit less of this, but I still think so many restaurants in particular really, really struggling. And many of them have been very vocal, especially locally, about restrictions that have come to them. And there was a survey of the National Restaurant Association. They said that two-thirds of Illinois restaurants that were polled said they would likely have to close within 6 months without federal aid. That's just an astounding number. So very, you know, sad news for Morton, such an institution after 42 years. But I'm sure it will not be the last that we will hear about closing due to these kind of restrictions.
And it's hard to imagine that they're going to get any federal relief in 2 months anyway, but we'll see what happens. Talk to me about Southwest Airlines and the mechanics.
Oh, yeah. Well, so Southwest had so far avoided furloughs, and they had gotten around some pay cuts, and they had asked them to take some, you know, voluntary pay cuts, things like that. Well, they've now 400 Southwest mechanics and technicians, so that's about 15% of that classification of worker. They got the federally required notices warning them about potential furloughs. So the furloughs haven't happened yet, but they are required to notify if that's on the table, and apparently it is. So if that were to happen, it would be about late January. I think it would be could be as soon as about January 23rd or so. So they're immediately, the union groups that work with those employees immediately said, you know, you left some federal aid on the table because there were strings attached, you didn't want it. You know, there's a lot of feelings going on right now. So it's 403 people total affected here. So that's going to be something we're going to keep watching really closely. You know, so many people, but, you know, have been impacted by airline furloughs, and so many airline workers still have question marks kind of day to day over the status and safety of their job. So, you know, here's another step where Southwest had kind of come out ahead of this, because they had said, hey, we've made some other decisions and we've invested in some areas, and I don't think we're going to have to do these furloughs and these tens of thousands like some other airlines. This is a relatively small number as compared to other, from what we've seen from American and United, but nonetheless, that this is a decision that Southwest knows they've got to make.
Okay. On that happy note, thanks.
I know. Better news one day, I'm sure.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much.